Frequency.
Who are you looking for?
A private detective by the name of Alex Stolling.
Radio.
And you, child fox, have taken on the leech soul of my nemesis, Count Dracula.
No!
Theater.
So, being designated to call, tell me about your world. Yes, very interesting.
Are you turned to the correct frequency? Frequency Radio Theater live in 3, 2, 1. Live from the Old Courthouse Square Museum in West Bend, Wisconsin, Frequency Radio Theater is on the air.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber, McGee, and Molly. Makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Fibber, McGee, and Molly. And once again, it's Fibber, McGee, and Molly time. Fibber, McGee, and Molly, the dramatic story of a woman with her faith in a man and a man with his faith in a newspaper. Will something exciting, unusual, or momentous take place in the little frame house at 79 Wistful Vista tonight? Or is that expecting too much? Yes, I guess it's expecting too much. Anyway, here they are, Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
Anything interesting in the paper, dearie?
Well, let's see here. Oh, here's an interesting article in Crop Surfaces, Molly.
You don't say.
Yeah, here, now, take corn, for instance.
Certainly. We can take it, and we can dish it out.
Oh, hey, I'm serious. This writer here says that if conditions keep up, the small farmer will be completely annihilated.
Oh.
Hey, what is annihilated?
Annihilated?
Yeah.
Why, that means, when the farmer, for instance,
Where is that dictionary?
It's probably in the closet with the rest of your stuff. Give me your key and I'll get it for you.
Oh, no, you don't. You lay off the stuff in that closet. I've got all my stuff arranged in there just the way I like it.
Now, don't be silly. Give me the key.
Okay. Now, let's see. Which one of these is the one?
Heavenly days. Why do you carry all these keys? Does it make you feel important or something?
What do you mean important? Every one of them keys is necessary.
Well, what's that little key for?
Now, that key there, that's a padlock key.
What padlock?
Well, for that backyard gate we used to have in Peoria.
What are you keeping that for? Are you homesick?
No, but if we ever move back to Peoria, I try to rent the same house because this key fits the padlock there. You got to think ahead on these things. Oh, and you see this key here?
It looks like the key to a can of salmon.
Nope, sardines. Yeah, I use that to clean my pipe with.
Oh, I see.
Oh, okay, let's see. Which one of these keys is the closet door key? Let's see.
Say, maybe we'd better see if the closet is locked. Let me take a look.
Oh, it's locked all right. You don't think I'd leave all my personal defects laying around for any prowler to get his hands on.
McGee, it isn't locked. Oh, help, McGee. I'm buried alive. Get this junk off of me.
All right. Oh, there's some more. But, Dad Rabbit, you might have been more careful.
Quick, help. There's funny little bugs all over me. Brush them off. Quick.
Oh, calm yourself. Calm yourself. Them are my trout flies.
Oh.
Oh, doggone it, Molly. Why did you have to go and mess up all this stuff?
Oh, dear. Come in.
Fibber, McGee, and Molly?
Yes.
Tell me, with all these radio shows being changed, Is it true that you're going to cut your program down to 15 minutes?
What do you mean, cut it down? It's only 15 minutes now.
What? Boy, it sure seems like half an hour.
Well, as the guy says when he fell off the horse and heard something break, that sounded like a rib.
Well, never mind that now. Oh, dear, oh, dear. Look at all this junk that fell out of that closet.
Oh, now don't worry. I'll put it back, Molly.
Oh, no, you won't.
Huh?
We're going to go through that pile of whatnots and throw out everything we don't need.
Oh, yeah? Well, I have been through this stuff 100 times, and there ain't a thing of it that I can spare.
Oh, there isn't.
No.
What's this old rusty horseshoe for?
Well, I found that in 1911, and as soon as I find 3 more, we can pitch horseshoes in the backyard.
I see. You expect to find 3 more.
Yeah, you betcha.
You don't think the automobile is here to stay, huh?
Well, it won't be if we don't catch up on the payments. Oh, come in.
Hi, mister.
Oh, hello there, little girl. What you want?
You remember that job that you promised me to take care of your baby, only you didn't have one? So I was going to bring my little brother over and take care of him, remember? Hmm? Do you? Hmm?
Yes, yeah, sure, I remember.
Well, the deal is off, see?
What you mean the deal is off? In the first place, there wasn't any deal. And in the second place...
My mommy had to take my little brother to the doctor today, so I can't bring him over.
Oh, well, now that's too bad. What's the matter with your little brother? Anything serious?
My mama thinks so.
Oh, she thinks so, huh?
She thinks so. She thinks he swallowed a dime.
Swallowed a dime? Oh, well, now that is serious.
Oh, no, it isn't.
Oh, yes, it is.
Oh, no, it isn't.
Oh, yes, it is.
Oh, he didn't swallow a dime, I betcha.
Huh?
It was only 8 cents.
It was only 8 cents. How do you know that?
Well, we were playing slot machine, and I fed it to him. What you doing, mister?
Well, we're cleaning out this closet, if you must know.
I mustn't.
Mustn't what?
No.
No?
Yes.
What?
Hmm?
Oh. Listen, kid, suppose you go home and annoy somebody else. Go bother your daddy.
He isn't home. He's working on the senseless.
He's working on the what?
The senseless. He goes to people's doors and he asks them how many people in the family and how old are you and all stuff like that there, I betcha.
Oh, you mean the census. Oh, shucks, I didn't think a kid your age knew what a census was.
Well, I do, I betcha.
Yeah?
The census is information, please, on the red, white, and blue network. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, goodbye, mister.
Oh, heavenly days, McGee. Imagine all this stuff falling out of one little closet. How'd you ever get it all in there?
No, I don't know. I guess I just inherited a gift for packing. My great-aunt Minnie had a job stuffing pimentos into olives. Oh, hey, look at this, Molly. It's that end table I made in manual training.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't you ever finish anything? It's only got 3 legs.
Well, they wouldn't let me stay in the 5th grade for another year.
Oh, McGee, look, one of our old dance programs from before we were married. I didn't know you were so sentimental, dearie.
Now, is that a dance program? I was saving it on account of that little pencil hanging onto it. You never know when you're going to need a pencil.
Oh, listen to this. Waltz, waltz, turkey trot, waltz, bunny hug, waltz, Texas Tommy, waltz.
No shoddish in there?
Oh, grizzly bear, waltz. Oh, you had every dance with me, but the last waltz. McGee, who did you dance that one with?
Now, nobody. We set that one out in the buggy, remember?
Oh, yeah. And we couldn't go back to the dance because you sat on a box of chocolate-covered cherries and spoiled your white pants.
Here, let me see, Molly. What about this old photograph album here?
I should say not. That's got all our family pictures in it.
Oh, dear.
Here's one of me, Aunt Addie, and Aunt Carrie. They both had big families.
How many kids did they have, anyway?
10 between them. Add 6 and Carrie 4. McGee, now what are you...
Well, hello, folks. I was just going by, and I thought I... Well, what goes on? Have you been buying out an antique store?
Oh, hello, Harlow.
Nah, this is just a lot of stuff McGee's been hoarding in the closet, Mr. Wilcox.
Isn't it wonderful how much you can pack into so little space?
Uh-oh.
For instance, you only give me about 6 lines to tell how Johnson's Glow Coat saves hours of house cleaning because it beautifies and protects linoleum with absolutely no rubbing or buffing.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in those 6 lines, I think I can get the idea across pretty well that a self-polishing preparation like Glow Coat is the very essence of good housekeeping.
Oh, cleaning.
It's so easy to use that it's easy to tell about.
Isn't he marvelous, folks? No, that guy is dedicated his whole life to Johnson's Glow Coat.
What do you mean, Fibber?
Harlow, they tell me that way back when you were in college, they wanted you to stroke the crew, but you said, no, 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 no stroking, no rubbing, no buffing. Not even for dear old University of Southeastern Nebraska.
Is that true, Mr. Wilcox?
No, I wasn't a crewman. I went out for ROTC.
Oh, Reserve Officers Training Corps?
No, revolutionizing old-time cleaning.
Oh.
Well, so long, folks.
Well, he got you there, McGee.
Oh, as the golf ball said when it landed 5 feet from the tee, I think I've been topped. That should be plenty of that, I think, right there. Let's get busy and put all the rest of this stuff back into the closet.
You mean you're going to keep all this junk? Can't we throw any of it out?
Nope. No, sir. I got a use for every one of these things.
Now, you don't need this, do you?
Huh?
Now, what good is one snowshoe?
Why, one what?
Snowshoe.
Snowshoe? Is that a snowshoe? Why, shucks, no wonder Billy Mills beat me so badly playing tennis.
Well, McGee, I've just about exhausted my impatience with you.
Oh, now why?
Packing all that useless junk back in that closet. How about all these old books?
What old books? Oh, let me see. Oh, them? Why, that's my correspondence course in taxidermy.
Taxidermy?
Taxidermy.
Why on earth did you want to study taxidermy?
Well, how did I know that it meant stuffing birds and animals? And there I was stuck with a chauffeur's license and a city map and a pair of them fancy black knee breeches.
Well, hurry up and put your playthings back in the closet.
Okay.
They look terrible laying around on the floor like that.
Oh, I'll get it. Hello? No, this is the McGee residence. Oh, you got the wrong number. Oh, is that you, Mert?
Oh, we gab the same time every week.
Oh, how's every little thing, Mert? What? Your uncle? Your Uncle Gulliver? Oh, that's too bad, Mert.
Oh, my.
Oh, and ain't found the body yet?
Oh, heavenly days, McGee. What happened?
Mert's uncle drove his car off a cliff and had to walk home. They found the chassis up in a tree, but they don't know where the body is. What's that, Mert? Oh, that's okay, Mert. Everybody has the wrong number now and then. Yeah, except Irving Berlin. All right, well, let's see now.
McGee, why are you saving this long stick of bamboo?
Well, now, Molly, that's got a very definite purpose. If I was ever offered a job as a sparring partner for Joe Lewis, that's the 10-foot pole I wouldn't touch it with.
Oh. Say, do you really think you can get all this stuff back into the closet?
Oh, sure I can. Now, I don't want anybody touching these things either but me. They're too valuable.
Oh, okay.
And I had it done an hour ago if I hadn't been interfered with.
All right, you do it then. I have some cleaning and polishing to do in the kitchen.
All right, I'll get that. Boy, dead rabbit, I wish somebody would just crawl in through the window now and again for the novelty of it. Here, come in.
Well, hello there, McGee.
Oh, it's you, Gildersleeve.
I just thought I'd come in to tell you that. My goodness, what's all this?
Oh, just something out of my closet. I'm straightening it up. Oh, hey, Gildersleeve, put that hatchet down.
I'll do no such thing. That's my Boy Scout hatchet you borrowed last summer.
No, Dad Rabbit, it ain't nothing of the kind. That is my Boy Scout hatchet.
Mm.
Oh, look there at the insignia on the handle. Owl Patrol.
Well, I belong to the Owl Patrol myself.
You and the Owl Patrol. Ha! You don't even know the password for the Owl Patrol.
Who?
Well, somebody must have told you. Now listen here, Gildersleeve, I bet you don't know a thing about scouting.
I do too. I was an Eagle Scout with 26 merit badges.
Oh, go on. Can you tie a sheep shank? Can you imitate the mating cry of the chimney swallow? Can you tell which way is north when you're lost in the woods?
Certainly.
How?
I face south, and then turn around quick.
Look, Gildersleeve, if you're really a scout, you can do your daily good turn by scramming out of here and letting me finish putting this stuff back in my closet.
Well, all right, McGee.
Well.
You sure that isn't my hatchet?
On my word of honor as a member of the Owl Patrol, Gildersleeve.
Well, all right, McGee. I'll see you later.
Okay.
Say.
Hmm?
Give me the password again, will you?
Who?
Who?
He's no Boy Scout. That guy couldn't build a fire in a hayloft by rubbing two sticks of dynamite together. Well, I gotta get to the rest of this. Looks like about all of it. Yep, all packed back up in there. Whoo, what a job. Hey, Molly, Molly.
What is it, McGee?
Look, I got all that stuff back in the closet, all straightened out.
Oh, splendid, McGee, splendid.
And after this, when you want something out of there, you just let me get it
all
for you.
All right.
All right.
But now that you've got the dictionary out of there, why don't you leave it out? We may need it again. What's the matter?
I forgot to leave it out. I packed the dictionary back in the closet.
Oh, heavenly days.
No, you just stay away from there. I know exactly where I put it. I can get at it without any problem.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure it's in here someplace.
Oh, not again. Yes.
I found the dictionary. How do you spell annihilated?
Now look, McGee. That junk of yours is positively not going back into that closet.
Oh, yes it is.
Oh, no it isn't.
Oh, hey, wait a minute. Wrong routine.
Well, all right then. But if it does go back in there, I'll arrange it myself. Now you keep your hands off of it this time.
You're going to do it all by yourself?
I am.
Fine. As the fat lady says when she took off her corset, that lets me out.
Tain't funny, McGee, and that's good night, folks.
Good night!
This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat, inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night! This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company. Fibber McGee and Molly. Fibber McGee and Molly was originally written by Don Quinn. The role of Fibber McGee was played by Mark C.E. Peterson. Molly McGee was played by Jill Werderman. The role of the visitor was played by Lisa Lickle. The little girl was played by Christine Schmidt. And Gildersleeve was played by Peter Jabot. Foley artists for this production of Fibber McGee and Molly were Susan Kist, Lisa Lickle, and Christine Schmidt. Our sound engineer was Jeffrey G. Wolfe. Harlow Wilcox, your announcer, was played by yours truly, Jed Dalnick. Stay tuned. Frequency Radio Theater will return after this brief commercial break.
Don't wait for spring. Put the feel of spring in your home with Bits and Pieces Floral. Bits and Pieces tulip bunches will get you in a spring mood. Bring a beautiful bunch of 10 tulips into your home for just $8.99 this week. This special continues till winter is over. And as you plan your spring home improvement, let Bits and Pieces spruce up your patio or enhance an entryway. Add a splash of color as you think spring with Bits and Pieces Floral. 319 South Main Street in West Bend.
They're the heating and air conditioning professionals and a whole lot more. Schneiss Heating and Air is your Carrier authorized dealer in West Bend, ready to provide a free estimate on your new furnace and air conditioning, as well as expert repair service. And visit their showroom to see their gas fireplaces on display. Remember Schneiss for air duct cleaning too. More than just a lot of hot air, depend on Schneiss Heating and Air Conditioning on South River Road in West Bend. Frequency Radio Theater returns.
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight, we escape to a lonely lighthouse off the steaming jungle coast of French Guiana and the nightmare world of terror and violence as we bring you again, in response to hundreds of requests, Three Skeleton Key.
Picture this place, a gray tapering cylinder welded by iron rods and concrete to the key itself. A bare black rock, 150 feet long, maybe 40 wide. That's at low tide. At high tide, just the lighthouse, rising 110 feet straight up out of the ocean, and all about it, the churning water. Gray-green, scum-dappled, warm as soup, and swarming with gigantic bat-like devilfish. Great violet schools of Portuguese man-of-war. And yes, sharks, the big ones, the 15-footers. And as if this weren't enough, there was a hot, dank, rotten-smelling wind that came at us day and night off the jungle swamps of the mainland. A wind that smelled like death. A wind that had smelled the slow and frightful death that came one night to this bare black rock. Set in the base of the light was a watertight bronze door. And in you went, and up. Yes, up and up and round, past the tanks of oil and the coils of rope, casks of wicks and racks of lanterns, sacks of spuds and cartons and cans, and up and up and up, round and round. Over the light storeroom was the food storeroom. And over the food storeroom was the bunk room where the three of us slept. And over the bunk room was the living and cooking room. And over the living and cooking room was the light. She was a beauty, big steel and bronze baby, with the sun gleaming through the glass walls all about, bouncing blinding little beams off the big shiny reflectors, glittering and refracting through her lenses. The whole gigantic bulk of her balanced like a ballerina on the glistening steel axle of her clicking rotary mechanism. She was a sweetheart of a light. And at night, you'd lie there on the stone deck of the gallery with her revolving smoothly and quietly out over your head, easing her bright white eye 360 degrees around the horizon. You'd lie there watching to see that the feeders kept working, that everything ran right, and it wouldn't be bad. The other two fellows snoring in their sacks two levels down, you'd smoke your pipe to kill the stink of the wind, and it wouldn't be bad. About those other two, Louis and Auguste, what a pair. Louis, he was head man, was a big fellow from the Basque country. Black beard, little hard black eyes, and a pair of arms that, I tell you, those arms were as big around as my legs. Yes, head man he was, and what word he let go was law. A silent fellow. And although I spent my first 2 weeks trying to strike up a real conversation, the most I could ever get out of him was,
"John, I took up this profession because I don't like people. They want to talk too much. It's quiet work, light tending, so let's keep it that way. You're getting to be as bad as Auguste. I thought maybe for once they'd send me someone who could keep his mouth shut."
That was Louis. When he accused me of becoming like Auguste, I quieted down, because Auguste was the talkingest man I'd ever met. the talkingest, and the ugliest. He was hunchbacked, stood 4 feet high, had red hair and big blue eyes. It seems he'd been an actor in Paris.
Yes, yes, indeed. Played in over 200 different productions, dear boy. At the Grand Guignol. Oh, but it was monstrous. Horrible the way we used to scare the audiences. I was hated. Yes, yes, they used to throw things and hiss and bare their teeth at me. Finally, it got too bad. I couldn't stand it any longer. I gave up the theater. My nerves, you understand. I gave it up completely. I really did. I couldn't stand it any longer.
It all started one morning at 2:30. I was on watch, lying on the cold stone deck, pulling on my pipe, staring out at the blackness, the phosphorescent combers and the big yellow stars, when out of the corner of my eye, I noticed something show up for a second, something the light had touched far off. I waited for her to come around again, and when she did, there it was, a three-master, a big one, about a half mile off, and coming down out of the north-northwest, coming straight for us. You must understand, our light was where it was for a very good reason. Dangerous submerged reefs surrounded us, and ships kept clear. But this one, this sailing vessel, was coming straight on. I went over to the gallery door and yelled, "Louis! Louis!" Couldn't understand it. I waited for the light to come around again.
"What is it?"
"Ship headed for the reef."
"Coming right up."
I had the glasses out now. I couldn't read her name, but I could see her quite plainly. All sails set, and the foam creaming away under her bow. Her beautiful lines. A Dutch ship, I guessed her. But why didn't she turn? Every time it passed, our light hit her with the glare of day.
"Ship? Where?
North, northwest. The light will touch her in a moment."
"Can't they see?"
"Look at her. She just keeps coming on."
"The squareheads."
"What is it? What is it?"
"Watch, north, northwest."
I know what it is."
"Huh? What?"
"The Dutchman! The Flying Dutchman! We did a play about her once. Oh, what a performance! You ghastly galleon, hag-ridden, curse-ridden..."
"Shut up, will you? She's luffing."
"Yes."
"Sloppy way to come about. She's derelict, that's it."
"Derelict?"
"Abandoned. The crew left her for some reason or another. But instead of sinking, she's gone on, running before every wind."
"She'll not run long, not with these reefs to break her up."
"It's a beautiful ship. Now why would men leave a beautiful ship like that?"
She didn't ram us, although we all expected it. But as we waited for the crash, she luffed again, caught some odd gust and went about. We watched her the rest of those black hours, heeling and rocking, pushed and pulled by every stray wind, every freak current. Watched her until the dawn came, till the sea turned from black to a pearly gray. And on she came again, heading for us. We all had our glasses trained on her now.
"Auguste, you can kill the light."
"Right, Chief."
"She doesn't look so good by daylight. Think she'll ground this time?"
What?
"I say, do you think she'll ground this time?"
This is impossible. This is impossible."
"What?"
"Here, take my glasses. They're better than yours."
"All right. What is it you're..." I had to focus, and then my breath froze in my throat. The decks were swarming with a dark brown carpet that looked like a gigantic fungus, but undulating. And on the masts and yards, the guys and all were hundreds. No thousands. No... I don't know, an endless number of enormous rats.
"See them?"
"Yes, I see them."
"Now we know why she's derelict."
"Yes, now we know."
"Hey, what are you two doing? Here, give me a look."
"Yeah, give him the glasses. Here, take a look, Chatterbox. This will give you something to talk about."
"She's still heading for us."
"Yes.
If she's going to turn, she'd better turn soon."
"Suppose she doesn't."
"You mean suppose she piles up on the quay?"
"It's low tide."
"Yes, yes, it is."
"Where's all the conversation, Auguste? Huh? Here, want the glasses again? Want another look?"
No, no!
"She's still coming on."
Go away! Go away!
Turn, will you? Turn, I say. I pray, turn!
She's cracking up.
The rats! Look! On the water! Like a carpet!
They're swimming.
Sure, they're swimming. Those are ship's rats.
But they're swimming for the rocks.
The door below! It's open!
Come on! Down we went, racing down the stone stairs, taking them three and four at a time. Scared? You bet we were scared.
Auguste, you get the windows. Maybe they can climb. We don't know.
Right, Chief, but hurry! Hurry!
Look. See them?
No. Yes, I do. Up at the other end of the rock.
Look at them.
Millions.
They smell us. Here they come. Close the door!
Can't. It's stuck.
Here, let me!
Made it.
That was close.
One got in. Look, there.
Get him!
He was as big as a tomcat. Bigger. His eyes were wild and red. His teeth long and sharp and yellow. He went for us, starved and ravenous. And we fought him. Fought that one rat all over the room. It was, oh, believe me, I don't exaggerate. It was like fighting a panther.
Got him.
We better get aloft. As we ran up the winding staircase, we passed the tiny windows at the various levels, and at every one was a thick, wriggling, screaming curtain of brown fur. I was ahead of Louis, and I dreaded each successive level. Suppose they had found a way in?
Look at them! Will you look at them?
It's a nightmare.
Will you look at them?
The air of the gallery was thick and fetid with the stink of them. The light was dim, brown, filtered through the crawling mass that swarmed over the glass all about us. We couldn't see the sky. Nothing but them, their red eyes, their claws, their wriggling hairy snouts, their teeth, the rats. They screamed and howled and threw themselves against the glass. They were starving. And we three, we stood very quietly. Very, very quietly in the center of the glass room, under our beautiful light, and we waited.
What can we do? What can we do?
Take it easy, old man. Take it easy.
I can't.
It won't do any good to stand here and shake.
Yeah, that's right. Anybody want a cigarette?
Yes, I'll have one. Thank you.
Good boy. We gotta keep calm about this thing. Here's a light.
They don't like fire, do they?
Guess not.
Give me another match. You don't like that much. Turn the lights on.
Don't rile them, Auguste.
Give me some more matches. I'll strike them and strike them and strike them until they get scared and go away.
They won't go away. Not until...
Finish it, Chief. Not until what?
Not until they've been fed.
You can take just so much horror, and then you get used to it. And they were interesting to watch, you know. They couldn't understand the glass. They could see us, and they could rush at us, but that thin, invisible barrier held them off, stopped them. From time to time, we caught a glimpse of the rocks below. More rats down there, swarming brown velvet in the bright tropical sunlight. And then the tide began to rise. If only it would drown some of them.
Ship's rats, don't drown! No, sir, you cannot drown one of them! They're all climbing up the tower!
This bunch around here is getting thicker.
Yeah. Say, what's the time?
6:15.
You've got first watch, John.
Right.
Here, wake me up at 10.
I will.
Come along, Auguste.
It was getting dark. One side of the room was lit in a soft, filtered red. Sunset through the rats. Oh, very pretty. I set the weights, checked my fuel, and then lit the lamp. It caught them, lit them in their gigantic, wriggling web of pale, hairless bellies, twitching red tails, bright eyes. And then I started the light. The light drove them mad as she swung slowly and smoothly about. It blinded them in the fierce, stabbing bar of light, moving continually about, ever turning, ever touching, ever moving around and around. And they, twisting and stuttering, eyes flaming when they were struck by the light. The bright light moving, and behind, on the dark side of the room, so close I dared not turn my back, but you can't help turning your back when you're in a room made of glass. On the dark side of the room, you couldn't see them, only their eyes. Thousands of points of blank red light, blinking and twinkling like the stars of hell. Louis relieved me at 10, but I didn't get much sleep that night. And when I came up into the gallery early next morning, there stood Auguste, his back to me. He was bowing to the rats, waving his arms and making a speech.
My dear, dear audience, I am going to play once again that magnificent role which made me the toast of the Paris Theater. Mephistopheles, evil genius of the medieval underworld. I am he who did guide the dark soul of the damned into the nether parts. Do not be frightened, little children. I will not hurt you.
I stood staring at him, horror-struck, but he didn't notice me. The man had gone mad. He kept turning, telling his stories to all the rats, leaving no one out.
Auguste! Auguste!
Ah, another one! A latecomer! Take a seat on the aisle, dear patron!
Auguste, stop it, stop it!
Move over there! Let the gentleman be seated!
But he didn't stop. He went on, bowing and scraping to the rats, his big blue eyes rolling and winking, his wild red hair waving about him. I grabbed him by the arms, slapped his face. He looked at me like a child, and then his face screwed up. He looked as though he were about to cry. Go below. Go on.
Very well, then. Later, my dear audience, later. Matinee today.
Sure, he was crazy, but I guess we all were. A few hours later, he came back up and caught Louis and me teasing the rats. Yes, sounds horrible. It was fun. We would get right up against the glass and make faces at them. It drove them crazy. They would scratch away, trying to get at our eyes. Louis was even cuter about it. He'd pull a piece of bread out of his pocket and press it against the glass. The rats would scramble into a solid ball, biting each other, clustering like grapes. From time to time, a whole knot of them would slip and fall the 110 feet to the surf below.
Ha, ha, ha! Look at the sharks!
They're eating them.
Yeah, the sharks are our friends. Here, I'll get another bunch together. Ha, ha, ha! Come on, my beauties, that's it. Come on, pile up, kill each other. Oh, there they go.
Auguste joined in, too. Oh, very ingenious, Auguste. He learned that if he spread-eagled himself against the glass, they'd bunch and bundle against his figure. Then he'd leap back.
Look, my portrait in rats!
It went on all day. And then I was lying in bed. It was about midnight. I was very tired, and I was just beginning to fall off to sleep when I became conscious of a new sound. Couldn't figure it at first. I got up, lit the lamp, and went to the window. Even as I looked at it, I saw one of the panes begin to sag in. They had eaten the wood away. Louis, come quick!
What? What is it?
They found a way in. I held the glass with my hand. Now they were all going crazy, and assured of the success of this maneuver, were all nibbling away at the wood. Louis ran below and returned with a large sheet of tin. We spread it against the window and hammered it into place. Even as we did, we felt the heavy bodies thudding against the other side as the window gave way.
That ought to hold. If it doesn't, we're done for.
Rats can't eat tin?
No, they can't.
What was that?
I don't know. It came from below.
The storeroom window.
Oh, they're in! They're swarming up the stairs!
Drop the trap.
Right.
Two of them got in.
Let's go after them.
We didn't have to go after them. They came at us.
I leaped to one side and grabbed a marlin spike, swung, and smashed one in midair. I whirled to see Louie with the other. It had ripped his hand open, and the blood was pouring all over the place. He held his hand aloft and kicked at the snarling rat. I stepped and swung and got him.
My hand! He got my hand!
That's both of them, Louie. I'll get you something to tie that up.
Blood! Look at it! My blood! I'm bleeding!
Now, don't worry about it, Louie. Here, look. I'll wind this kerchief around it. It'll be okay.
Blood!
There now. It's not bad. Just a flesh. Then I became conscious of another new sound. They were gnawing their way through the wooden trapdoor. I watched the wood, fascinated. And even as I did, it began to give way, and a bristling, whiskery nose showed through. Louie, we've got to go up! Next level was the living quarters in the kitchen. I slammed the trap door there, too. But it, too, was wood.
My blood! What are we going to do?
I don't know. They'll be through this one in a moment.
The gallery. The trap door in the gallery is metal.
Good, come on. We made it. We lay across the trap door exhausted, while below us, the rats took over the entire tower. I could hear them howling and fighting over our food supply, our water, our leather. And all about us, the others screamed and glared in at us, swayed in a tangled mass, hypnotized by the ever-turning light. By morning, the air in the little room was horrible. Until now, we've been getting air from the tower below. Now that was sealed off. So was all our food and water. We lay exhausted, panting, waiting, waiting. The hours crawled on. I was almost dozing from fatigue when I saw a sight that brought me too fast.
Would you like to come in, my beauties? Would you? I hold the powers of life and death. And I can let you in.
August was standing by the glass, and in one hand he held a wrench. He was tapping the glass gently, not quite hard enough to break it. I eased myself to my feet and slowly, very slowly, tiptoed towards him.
All I have to do is tap just a little harder.
I found a coil of wire in the tool kit, and I trussed him up, fastened him to a stanchion in the center of the room. Louis was of no help. He lay on his side, looking at his bloody hand, weak and sick as a baby. So there I was, a lunatic and a coward for company, and all about watching our little drama, the rats. The day dragged by. The supply boat wasn't due for another 12 days. I don't know what they could have done if they had come. We had only one way of summoning them, and that was to shoot off distress rockets. But the rockets were four floors below. And even if they'd been right there in the gallery, I couldn't have opened a window to fire them. That night, I tended the light, but its flame was devouring our oxygen. The following day, we lay thirst-tormented, starving, waiting, waiting. And the following night, I again tended the light. But the small supply of spare wicking we kept in the gallery had become exhausted. And quite suddenly, about midnight, the light went out. Nothing I could do. The wicks were stored three levels below. Nothing I could do. Nothing. From time to time, I'd strike a match to see the clock. And when I did, it lit up the million red eyes about us. All about. Watching. Waiting. Below, it had grown quiet. They cleaned us out, and now they too were waiting. All waiting. And then the rats, quite suddenly, were silent. And then I heard it. And then I saw the sky and the stars. The rats were gone. I went to the glass. Out there in the water, a small freighter, a banana boat, showing a few lights, came softly and innocently at us. The light was out. They didn't know. I wanted to open the windows to call out to them, to warn them somehow, but I was afraid. What if the rats were hiding from me, tricking me? So I waited. She grounded very softly on a reef not 200 yards from the quay. Grounded so gently that the man playing the cornet, was he a passenger or a crewman off watch, didn't even stop playing. They tried washing her back off. I could have told them to save their fuel. The tide was rising. Would it float her free? And I waited. That's all. That's the story. The sun came up, and there wasn't a rat on the whole quay. Every last one of that terrible army had left us, gone back to sea on their new ship. Auguste, insane asylum. He never recovered. Louis, they took him into Cayenne, where he died of blood poisoning from his bite. Oh, yes, well, that's the whole of it. And if you'll excuse me now, I must go set my traps. No, mouse traps. No rats in this lighthouse, I should say not. Life in the lights isn't bad, but sometimes when I see a strange vessel approaching, I get a little nervous, sure. Somewhere on the seas, there's a little banana boat without a crew. That is, without a human crew. Three Skeleton Key was based on a short story written by George Stadoos and adapted for radio by Escape. In our cast, Mark C.E. Peterson was the voice of Louis. Peter Gibault was Auguste. And yours truly, Jed Dalnick, was the voice of Jean. Foley artists for Three Skeleton Key were Jill Werderman, Christine Schmidt, Lisa Lickle, and Susan Kist. Sound engineer was Jeffrey G. Wolf. Music for tonight's Frequency Radio Theater performance was performed by Craig Ellefson, Peter Gibault, and Paul Schmidt, and edited by Jeffrey G. Wolf. Frequency Radio Theater is produced and directed by Jeffrey G. Wolf.
Don't wait for spring. Put the feel of spring in your home with Bits and Pieces Floral. Bits and Pieces tulip bunches will get you in a spring mood. Bring a beautiful bunch of 10 tulips into your home for just $8.99 this week. This special continues till winter is over. And as you plan your spring home improvement, let Bits and Pieces spruce up your patio or enhance an entryway. Add a splash of color as you think spring with Bits and Pieces Floral. 319 South Main Street in West Bend.
They're the heating and air conditioning professionals, and a whole lot more. Schneiss Heating and Air is your Carrier authorized dealer in West Bend, ready to provide a free estimate on your new furnace and air conditioning, as well as expert repair service. And visit their showroom to see their gas fireplaces on display. Remember Schneiss for air duct cleaning, too. More than just a lot of hot air, depend on Schneiss Heating and Air Conditioning on South River Road in West Bend.
Frequency Radio Theater is on the internet at www.frequency.com. That's www.freequincy.com. Check out the latest in Frequency Radio Theater news and news from around the world in radio drama. Frequency Radio Theater, are you tuned to the correct frequency? Tonight's Frequency Radio Theater program will be rebroadcast at 9 p.m. on 104.9 FM WTKM or listen on the internet at www.wtkm.com.
Bits and Pieces Floral, 319 South Main Street in West Bend.
They're the heating and air conditioning professionals and a whole lot more. Schneiss Heating and Air is your Carrier authorized dealer in West Bend, ready to provide a free estimate on your new furnace and air conditioning, as well as expert repair service. And visit their showroom to see their glass gas fireplaces on display. Remember Schneiss for air duct cleaning, too. More than just a lot of hot air, depend on Schneiss Heating and Air Conditioning on South River Road in West Bend.
Frequency Radio Theater is on the internet at www.frequency.com. That's www.freequency.com. Check out the latest in Frequency Radio Theater news and news from around the world in radio drama. Frequency Radio Theater, are you tuned to the correct frequency? Tonight's Frequency Radio Theater program will be rebroadcast at 9 p.m. on 104.9 FM WTKM or listen on the internet at www.wtkm.com.
From the old Courthouse Square Museum and from the cast and crew of Frequency Radio Theater, we bid you a thank you and good night. This is Frequency Radio Theater signing off. Thank you, everyone.